God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
The courage to change
the things I can.
The wisdom
to know the difference.
That was fun. All right. Lost my place already. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome anyone. Can use the chat function to send their phone number to a newcomer privately. If you're new, you can unmute yourself. You can tell us your name, who you are, and how long you've got. And I'll pan over in case somebody's waving at me and they're unsure if they can get. All right. Well, if you're shy, welcome. We have a preamble. I'm going to share it, and I'm going to ask Morgan to read it if I can pull it up or if he has it. Here to go.
Pull it up on my phone really fast.
I just had it open. It disappeared. I got it. I'll share it with
you. I got it also. You want me to go?
Go. Just go.
All right. I'm Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks for reading, Morgan. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing step two. And I would like to please welcome our panel, Jill and Carolina. I'm excited. So I will read each paragraph and the page number, and then we'll give each member of the panel a chance to share. And it works like this. I end up having this fun time sharing the screen with y'all. So step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's a screen. Page 45. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have, hold on a second, make it bigger for y'all. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible, but to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face, but it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. Okay, got a little bit more to read. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. All right, Jill, you're up.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, I am Jill. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 10th, 1996. And I'm one of the alcoholics that took the scenic route. I passed through several times before I really got here. But the whole thing was I couldn't accept was the very first part of this, the difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic. I thought, what's the big deal? We both drink. You know, one, I can stop anytime I want. That was my big mantra. I can do anything I want if I put my mind to it. Well, after coming in several times and hitting some real rough spots in my life, I had to finally start looking that, you know what? This is getting worse. It's never getting better. And I can't control this. I can't predict it anymore. You know, I started having blackouts. That was inconvenient. It wasn't scary as much as it was inconvenient because it was like, you know, God, what did I do? Oh, well, I won't worry about that right now. It sounded a lot like Bill W. and his story. I really didn't pay a lot of mind to it until all of a sudden I had this, they talk about us having a moment in our drinking when we really do see the truth. We really see it. And I saw it one night. And it wasn't even the worst drunk I ever had. It was just a mediocre drunk, but I did black out and did make an ass of myself. But I had this epiphany that it was always getting worse. It was never getting better. And I come from a family of alcoholics. You know, we have more darn fortitude when it comes to alcohol. And I've watched people really go to the bitter end. And it's really pitiful. It's really pitiful. And so when I came into the program in 96, and I really, really started saying, I'm going to really do this. I didn't understand anything about what was going on in AA, and I didn't particularly like any of it. And I half-assed did a lot of it. You know, I came in, yeah, I got to go to meetings, yeah, yeah. I still didn't take it all that serious until all of a sudden I was in AA, and I was trying to do this stuff. I was trying to best my heart, best my ability to really take in what they were telling me. And in here, when it said, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, I that really hit my button when I saw somebody go out and get drunk, who I really had a very high opinion of. How could he do that? How could that person get drunk? And so I said, well, he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I went, well, I wonder if I'm one of those. You know, I started really questioning it. So when they say step two to came to leave power greater than yourself, who destroys sanity. What that was for me, because I can remember really being very vocal early on in my sobriety. I don't believe in God. I just don't believe in God, y'all. I do not believe in God. I don't even like God. Anyway, so then he goes, that's okay. Will you just do these things? And so this is how resistant I was. And I didn't know it. I thought I was well wrapped as a human being. They gave me this little orange piece of paper with prayers on both sides. I could not memorize those. And I'm pretty okay when it comes to being able to hold a job and do certain things, but I could not memorize those prayers. I was so resistant to what this program was saying. So I had a great sponsor who really focused on the insanity. And I thought, well, I'm not insane. And as she goes, she reminded me, you've been through how many therapists? Who was that psychiatrist that said you had to go to AA? You've been in and out of these rooms for four or five times. And that is, I said, oh, well, yeah, but you know, I did it voluntarily. It's like, Jill, you know, there's something wrong here. That you do know in your heart, you know that something's off key here. So step two for me was where I could start taking in that I had a problem I couldn't solve. And I tried to solve it. I really had. That's with all those psychiatrists and doctors and all that was about was, but I kept thinking it was because I had issues. It wasn't because I drank too much, but I did catch on after a while that drinking was just a symptom of that. But what happened to me was step two became the starting point for me. It's where I started getting comfortable with surrendering to a process that was going to lead me to not drink for number one. But another thing was to see things more clearly, because I did see that I don't see the world through the eyes of, let's say, some of the people I work with. some of my family and stuff like that. So it's like, I did know there was something off and something wrong. And step two was very general. If I could focus on this, the insanity, we're going to be like, well, I'm going to get right thinking after going through this. And so it's kind of tricks you into doing, no, you're going to do some steps. So step two led me to believe that there was another way of running, of living my life than what I had been doing. You know, if, okay, what I've been doing is bashing my head into brick walls, getting in relationships I couldn't get out of. And she had me look at my drinking, really look at your drinking, you know, what caused you, what, when did you drink? When didn't you drink? And we came down to the fact that if the sun rose, I drank, if the sun set, I drank. I drank every day of the week towards the end. And it was funny because before I came into AA this last time, it was only a matter of maybe a couple of months before, I'd been in the hospital for alcohol poisoning. And the first thing I did when I got home was I walked up to the sink, I filled a tumbler pretty full of bourbon, and I put in a splash of orange juice because I was getting healthy, damn it. I knew I was deficient in that. So, I mean, I'm standing there and going, this is crazy. I actually could say to myself, this is crazy. What are you doing? You just got out of 3 days in the hospital and you're standing at the sink drinking. And I realized right then I needed to drink. It wasn't because it was fun or that it was trying to catch a buzz. It was because I needed a drink. And so the whole process was, I didn't even focus on God. It was like, God was like non-event for me at this point. It was like, I thought I could hang on to that idea that I didn't need God. I'll just hang on to AA and I'll just go read this book and do these things. And maybe just then I'll get it under control. I don't even think at that time I was thinking about that I had to, that I was really going to quit. I was just going to get it under control. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. I'm Caroline. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 1st of 2000. And everything Jill said, ditto. I could just relate so much to everything you just shared, Jill. I'm just nodding my head over here, you know? And this just speaks to me. Like, if I could sum up what we just read, I think it's that you're screwed, right? Like, I'm screwed. Like, that's what this is saying, right? That if, you know, if when I honestly want to, I can't quit entirely, which was my experience. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic, right? So, okay, all right, I'm alcoholic, fine. But, you know, well, maybe I can do something about it. But then further down, it says lack of power. That was our dilemma, right? That we had to find a power, that our human resources, everything that we tried, nothing is going to work other than a spiritual experience. And I don't know about you guys, but just like Jill, for me too, that was a tough pill to swallow, right? You know, that I could do none of it by myself. I was kind of raised to, you pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, you know, and you just power on, you power through, you know? And when I was about 21 in a treatment center, you know, I never thought I was an alcoholic. I really didn't. I was just like, I'm partying. And so is everybody else. Everybody parties like I do, right? I mean, that's what we do. That's what everybody does, right? You know, and after a run of institutions within the course of like 3 months, you know, two psych wards and a treatment center, you know, by the time I get, you know, coming out of the first psych ward, Tucker's, I went immediately back to the drink. I mean, I went back, drove all the way to Blacksburg, got to where I needed to go. And I started drinking a beer. And that's when I looked back. At the time, I had no idea, of course, but as a result of these steps and having great sponsorship, that showed me, let's go back and look at your drinking, right? Let's go back and look at it. And I saw that in that moment, right? Having met you guys came to a meeting in that detox and that psych ward. And, you know, I mean, I was just like, no, that's not me. And, you know, but I, looking back, I see the minute I got there, I'm drinking. And there was no thought whatsoever before I started drinking that beer. It was just like nothing. It was just, I just started drinking. And about halfway down, I was like, I don't think I'm supposed to be doing this. And then I was like, oh, well, you know, and off to the races I went. And then 2 weeks later, I'm in another psych ward in that part of Virginia, you know, and I come out of there and I'm like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with me. I need my drink. I need, you know, and it was an act of God for sure. That, you know, two members of AA reached out to me. I was in that psych ward and I was on a payphone in the middle of the hallway. And that was the moment where I surrendered to go to a treatment center, you know? And then when I got to the treatment center, it was like, okay. And I got some news that I was pregnant at 21 and it was not planned. And, you know, it was like, my life is now over. I am in a treatment center. I'm pregnant and, you know, I'm completely right. I was at the jumping off point, you know, and it was then that I was just this much willing to do this program, to stay in the treatment center. Cause I faked my suicide to try to get out of the treatment center and get back to my life, you know, the life. But I had about this much more willingness, like 51% more willing to do this program and 49% go back out. Right? Like that's where I started with this powerlessness piece and this starting to open my mind to a power greater than myself. And I had all the God baggage too. And I was like, I don't want God. No, not. I knew there was a catch here. You know, I knew there was a catch. I knew this program was too good to be true. And, but I don't know. It's just, you know, like it talks about in the book, circumstances made me willing. And my experience has been that over the years, this has just been one of those, I hate the layers of the onion metaphor, but this powerlessness and really understanding my powerlessness, which then requires me to look for a power because I got none, you know? So really understanding this powerlessness has taken me a long time. Right. It's just been an uncovering oh my gosh. Yes. And as I have experiences sober blowing up my life, you know, I realize, oh, this is not about alcohol. Like I'm powerless over my thinking and I'm powerless over me. And I need a power to run my life or I'm screwed. So that I'll pass.
That's fire, ladies. Great way to start. All right. Let's see what I got for you to go with next. We're on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. Provided we took other simple steps, we found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. Go ahead, Jill.
Okay. This is really interesting because when AA started all of this, you know, they really did know who we were. They did know what we were going to come up against because, you know, if you tell me I've got to do something, ain't happening. You know, I tend to still be kind of like that. But what I love about this is no one told me I had to do anything. Nobody told me I had to believe anything, that I had to didn't do what they did. They just laid out to me what they did. They went to meetings. Okay, can do that. They read the book. Okay, I can do that. And in my wandering around before I could really understand what was happening, I love to read. I love to read anyway. But I was reading a biography of Einstein, and he was kind of a character. But he said something in there that really struck me. He said, the mind that creates the problem cannot find the solution on its own. And I thought, well, that's what AA is telling me. You know, if I have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and I even had psychiatrists tell me, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. You know, you can hear it from several sources. You tend to believe it might be true. And I found out what that was is that I had drank so hard and so long that that what y'all were asking me to do really didn't seem that big a deal, didn't seem that hard. Will you call me every day? That's my sponsor. We read these things. It seems like it just started to flow. And I love this one. It says here, we found that God does not make too hard terms on those who seek him. I didn't even know I was seeking God. I just thought I was doing some mechanical process that was going to get me someplace. And I didn't even know where that was going to get me. You know, it was just like, everyone else is doing it. I'll do it. Yeah. You know, that's a kind of a clumsy, sloppy surrender, but it was enough to keep me in the rooms. But the neatest thing is there were people in AA that were sober and they did know how to help a person like me. I can remember them giving me little jobs, having me talk to newcomers. You know, before I had anything really to give anyone, it was encouraging me to get out of me to some degree. And so they were leading to the solution without being dictatorial or anything like that, just quietly, gently leading me forward. And I didn't have to do it. I think that the thing that always struck me was, this is an inside job. I either do it or I don't do it. And I love when my sponsor said to me, you can do it or not do it. It has no effect on me. And that kind of hurt my feelings. You know, I'm sure I should have an effect on somebody. But what a gift that is for someone to be honest enough to say, you know, this is what we see. This is what we do. I remember recently I had to say to someone, they said, well, we need something more than this AA stuff. I said, well, that's all we got. That is all we got. We don't have anything else. And it was okay to say, to let someone say, well, I can do something else. I said, yeah, maybe it'll work. I don't know. To not have to be so rigid. And in doing that stuff, I became a little bit open-minded about hearing things and being more willing. I'll talk about that later on, because step two is a pretty dynamic step. You know, it really isn't a whole lot of activity, but there's something in step two that really means a lot to me. I'll talk about that later, but right now I'm going to talk about, I got the problem I can't solve. And AA seems to be, a lot of people here aren't drinking. They seem to be doing okay. No one's kicking their butt. And so I come and I kind of join in. I go drink coffee. I go to conferences. And in that process, I get led to the steps. The steps infiltrated me very slowly because I was so resistant, and I didn't realize it was defiant and rebellion and all of that is fear dressed up as macho. But it was just I think people realize I was pretty fragile, even though I would have told you I was a kick butt babe. I was a girl that rode a motorcycle on Virginia Beach when I was in the late 60s. I could just do anything. Well, that was all fear dressed up as macho too. But what I get to see today is when I see other people that are kind of rigid and rough, they're holding in an awful lot of what I had. And I had was filled with anger and terrified. And so I was just waiting for someone to tick me off and I could take a walk. And nobody in AA ticked me off or told me to take a walk. You know, that was the other part. People were oftentimes telling me, you need to take a walk. But so it's a gift. And so when they say the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all inclusive, I always think of the people that helped me in the beginning. They were just so gentle, so welcoming, but they didn't tell me any bull either. You know, I can remember, you know, you can do that, but you're probably going to drink. Do you know that? Or when someone did drink that I just thought, oh my God, this person, they probably should be up for sainthood. They're so sober. And they went out and drank. They go, he couldn't get honest. That's all that was. And I thought, huh, this is not what I thought it was. So it was the first time in my life, I think, that little things started getting into my head where I could see that my thinking really needed an overhaul. And I didn't know how to go about it, but they just said, come on, come with us. We'll show you. We'll show you. And they do that more showing me rather than telling me, because telling me is kind of like throwing words into a vacuum, whoop, or black hole. You know, they just, but if you're showing me something, it's going to stick with me. That's what I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Jill. I don't like anybody telling me what to do either. You, in fact, if you tell me what to do, I'm going to cop an attitude and do the opposite to spite you. So that's me, right? That's my alcoholic crazy. It seems to be two parts to this reading, right? So the first part is just like, hey, however inadequate, wherever you start, as long as you just start with something, right? So I started with nature. You know, I started with nature. I was like, okay, the trees, the wind, that I believe there's a spirit there, right? And I can, like, I can see that and I feel like I can feel that. And so that's where I started. Then I graduated to the AA group, right? And that was my higher power, you know? And then it just kind of went from there, you know? Then I went like back to my childhood God and went like really, I started going to church and I got like really into that. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? But, you know, that's just what I did. And then I went through a period of like, okay, I'm not doing church, right? I'm not doing that. I'm just going to have more of a simple relationship with this power. And that's just been how it's kind of like evolved, you know? And then I always said I hated Catholicism and everything. And now, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, God has led me back to the Catholic Church. I would have never told you that 10 years ago. I would have been like, what? No way. Never, right? And it just goes to show that I don't know what's best for me. And as long as I just follow the breadcrumbs that God puts in front of me, I'm going to be all right, you know? So anyway, I love that because that's been my experience, is that like it can be freaking nature. And it just as long as I'm willing to believe that there's something bigger than me, right? And then that last piece of the realm of the spirit, and God doesn't make too hard terms, and the broad and the roominess. Like here, I'm realizing here, this is where Bill is starting to introduce some new ideas about God, right? Because I come into Alcoholics Anonymous with, I did at least, not everybody does, I realize that, but I came in with a lot of God bag, like a lot of old ideas about who God was, how he thought and felt about me, you know, that I, you know, was the worst, you know, that I was, you know, had done way too many things, had too many X's on my report card up in heaven. And, you know, just how could you, you know, just this real shaming, very punishing, very rigid. Jill, you use the word rigid. It's so cool, right? Because it's like very rigid God. Like I never thought God was broad and roomy and soft, right? Doesn't make too hard terms, too hard, right? So that means it's soft terms, you know? And like, that's for me, when I first had a sponsor reading through the book and we're reading this, it's like blowing my mind, right? Because what I feel like Bill does here is he starts to start to pop these bubbles for me of my old ideas of what I think God is, so that I can have a new experience, you know, with a power, which I desperately needed and I desperately need today. And I think I need it more so today than I did back then, you know, because this disease is a progressive illness, you know, and I've had experience with seeing my resistance and my defiance 16 years sober almost took me out, you know? So I know, I have personal experience with knowing that this disease gets worse, not better, without a drink. And so I need this access to this power, but I can't access the power if I'm still holding on to old ideas about God. You know, those old ideas about God is what's going to keep me stuck. Because if I believe God is rigid, you know, taskmaster, punishing, you know, doesn't care about me, how am I going to do the rest of the steps? You know, I mean, I did still think that, and I still went through the steps and it still worked, right? Like, that's the cool thing, is I still had those ideas and it still worked. But again, as I've kept going through the steps, it just gets deeper and deeper, right? And I realize, oh, this old idea about God is back, and that's what's blocking me. All right, let's look at that with a sponsor. Let's talk about that, right? So I can be free. So I'll pass.
Very nice. Excellent. 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 All right. Page 47. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been proven repeatedly, or has been repeatedly proven among us, that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
Sorry, I'm using my iPad, so I always have to kind of push around the screen. Okay, this is, do I believe, or am I willing to believe? And I'll reiterate that I didn't even need to even question that. You know, I couldn't blow over that when I first started. Now, in today's world, I really have to say, you know, if I believe God's in charge, then why am I having a temper tantrum? You know, and when I can look at this and I can see how prejudiced my ideas are, how prejudiced my thought process is, I've got one idea and it's black and white. I always thought I was really avant-garde, you know, kind of, I was a 60s child, for crying out loud. I was very fixed, very rigid, very, my actions were pretty out there, but my head wasn't. My head was pretty like, But when we do this, this is just more surrender to the process. That's all this means to me, is that the simple cornerstone, this whole thing, when I first started doing this, I did it very, not realizing what any of it meant, not even thinking about what most of it meant. And in today's world, I really do know what I believe today. And I can stand on it, and I can, if someone wants to talk to me about it, I can talk to them about it. But I really realized that all this is doing is asking me to have a little bit of an open mind. Because when I let God in, even a little bit, he's so sneaky, he wants to come all the way in. And today I applaud that and I welcome it. But back when I started this, not understanding it, I can remember just saying, you just don't give up and you just keep walking. In our literature, it says, we trudge the road to happy destiny. I think it was Bob D out in Las Vegas said one time, what trudge meant back when this book was written was walk with purpose. It didn't mean toil and struggle. It meant walk with purpose. And I can honestly say, I've been walking. My purpose has been a little shaky at times, but I have never fully stepped off the path, because I did get the idea that if I ever drank again, I probably wouldn't come back. You know, it wasn't that I was so good. It was that my pride just wouldn't let me step over that line, step back in, I don't think, because I've got a tremendously strong black and white pride that just, as I always said, you know, early on, my pride kept me from asking for help, and then it kept me from taking the help that was being offered. And it was like, boy, if you got a pride like that, you really are screwed, unless you can just surrender enough to stay here, just stay here. And no matter how bad you look, people forget it. They really do. They don't remember it very long at all. But it's just stay and walk with purpose in this whole path. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Jill. I love that, walking with purpose. You know, I love that. And it's just, it reminds me of one of my sponsors used to talk about, or was it a speaker I heard it from first? I can't remember. But they used to talk about trained feet, you know, and trained feet, that my feet take me to a meeting. My feet take me to a service commitment. My feet take me to, you know, a 12-step call. My feet take me to meeting with sponsees. Like, it's my feet. And if I get, Alcoholics Anonymous has an amazing way of training my feet. If I am willing, you know, if I'm willing to listen to what you guys say to do. And that's all I did, right? Is I just listened to everybody in my first home group, everything they said. I went, okay, okay. I mean, in my head, I was like, oh my God, what? You know, but, you know, I was like, okay, you know, probably more too, because I wanted their approval, but that's another topic. So, but anyway, you know, just, and that's, you guys trained my feet, you know, you guys trained my feet. And so no matter if life is good or bad, as long as I've got trained feet, I'm going to be all right. And that's been my experience, you know, for, you know, these years has been, I've gone through some really hard times. I've gone through some great times, and all the while my trained feet have kept me sober, you know, through Alcoholics Anonymous and God. So, and let's see, I don't know what I was talking to. Oh, that wasn't about the reading. Sorry. I was just riffing off Jill. As soon as a man says he does believe or is willing to believe, it's like you start, and that's the truth, right? As long as, like, with women I've sponsored and my own experience, it's like, if I can say, okay, I'm willing to believe. A big thing for me early on, because I was so wrapped up in these old ideas about God, and I was so resistant and I was so defiant. But what I could get with was when a member of my home group told me, can pray for the willingness to be willing to believe, you know, that was awesome. Right? Because I was like, I don't want to pray for the willingness to believe, you know, I want to fix this my way. I want to fix me, and I want to get the heck out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Cause what 21-year-old is in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, like, this is a big bummer, man, huge bummer of like epic proportions. So I don't want to be here, you know? And so when you told me be willing to believe, even that, I was like, man, I don't want to be willing. I don't want to pray for willingness to believe. Well, can you pray for the willingness to be willing to be? I was like, okay, yeah, that's, I can get with that. You know, I can get with that. And that's what I did. And it worked. So I'll pass.
Rock on. That was so great. All right. Let's see what next read. Page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. It was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
Yes, that's a great thing. There's a fellow in Norfolk, Mark. I love what he says about this. He says, you know, I don't think we have as much problem with the God idea as we do with the not drinking. And I love that, because I think most of my resistance was always that God was really not that big an issue, because I really didn't think about it very deeply. But not drinking was a real big issue. It's like forever. So AA, step two gives me time to ease into this. It's like you get to see that this might be bigger than I thought it was. Oh my God, it might be more than I thought it was. But in here, if you go page 52, on page 53, there's a paragraph that I love that I'm just going to talk about just a little bit. It says, when then somewhere in there, we don't know. It was a self-imposed crisis. We couldn't postpone or evade. That was when I came face to face with me. I was in a situation I couldn't postpone or evade. I was drinking myself to death, and I had no power over it. It was going to happen if I didn't do something different. And having that realization that something was going to happen to me, regardless of what I thought, or regardless of how much effort I put into it, regardless of whatever, it was like, okay, I better believe there's a power greater than me. I don't know where it's going to take me. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know anything about it. And well, let me just try to do what these people are saying. I started getting really serious about the steps. And that is really just coming into a little bit more open-minded, a little bit more questioning myself. I was so sure of my own ability. The alcohol was just kind of like, that's kind of embarrassing. that's awkward. But it's not, I thought I hit it really well. And at some point, my alcoholism, my active alcoholism, I couldn't hide it anymore. There was no hiding it. And I can remember thinking, well, I'll just have a couple of drinks before I go out to dinner with these people. And it got to a point where I could have a couple of drinks and go into a blackout. Or I could sit there and drink a whole bottle and just be maudlin, messy, depressing. So it was like when I started seeing that about myself, I had this idea, and it was still the simple reliance on the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. Mine was stop doubting the power of AA. Now in today's world, this is where I can bring this up, because now in today's world, I can see insanity in things in my daily life at times. When I'm obsessing about something, whatever, that's insanity. Why am I going there? I say I believe in God. God is everything or is nothing. Well, why am I acting like this is more important? I can get wrapped around the axle over whether my grass is growing right in the backyard. You know, it's like I had a heck of a time getting grass to grow. But this is, I mean, that sounds stupid, but, and that's insanity. You know, I can get so focused on something that it's not rational. And seeing it today in today's world, in today's life, I can see where step two really is much greater. If I can come to these realizations that I'm always being moved, I'm moving forward in this direction, or I'm sliding backwards. And thank heaven for sponsorship. My sponsor has been the biggest lifesaver for me in this walk, because I've invited her to tell me things that I would not have listened to from any other person, not another person. And God has given her a heart for me, because I think I would have told me to take a walk if I were her a few times. But the truth of it is that if we really know what, and I do, if I really know what my alcoholism is and where it has taken me, drinking or not drinking, all of a sudden this becomes a little bit more important. Our ideas didn't work. And so if I can take the time to get quieter and say, what is going on here? What is going on here? What is this insanity about? And it doesn't have to be raging mania type of insanity. It just might be worrying about the grass. You know, it doesn't have to be any big deal. But this, all of this grows. It becomes so much more. The whole step process becomes my walk. You know, it leads me to, I'm powerless, so blah, blah, blah. Okay, is this insane? Maybe sometimes it's not too insane. Maybe it's just a little OCD. But then I go into it. It's like I go to step three, and then I go to four, right? Pencil to paper. I've got some inventory that I just did this week. And then I talk about it. And then I get led. Then I get a lady that was speaking this week. I was at the Ladybug conference roundup. And one of the ladies said she, in 6 and 7, she got a 6 and 7 conscience. All of a sudden, something says, that's not real bright. Maybe you want to rethink that. You know, it's not like this, you know, what do they say, rainbows and unicorns. It's more of a like that something goes off and it says, that doesn't sound right. You might want to look at that. You might not want to do that yet. You might want to sit down and really prayerfully think about what you're doing. So this is, starts the whole process, but the longer I've done it, the more it has become real. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Blow that one off. Was not the basic solution of these bedevilments. It's like when all of a sudden I'm feeling sorry for myself, the self-pity, when the true nature of the wrong, where was I, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or afraid? I look at those and I go, okay, I'm feeling really self-pitying. What's going on here? What am I doing? And that's just plain selfishness all over the place. So this is a fantastic program, but there's so much more to it. We could talk all night long about this and that, but the whole thing was step two is the process that pries me away from my fixed, rigid ideas and opens up the door a little bit so the light of God can come through. And it looks like AA. It doesn't look like the God I expected. You know, I kind of like a little crown, a parade, you know, some little sparkling stuff. And it's just another smiling face saying, would you like a cup of coffee? That's it. Thanks. That's all I have.
Thanks, Jill. I'm laughing about the sparkles. We want the whole fanfare. That's awesome. Oh my gosh, these bedevilments. This is untreated alcoholism for me. And I really couldn't see it, honestly, in my drinking. It took me until 16 years sober, and I have blown up my life out of self-reliance, and I am in a major depression, nervous breakdown, have to take 6 months off of work. I'm in an IOP for depression, not for drinking, but I'm in an IOP for depression. Okay. Like, I remember sitting there going, okay, I'm 16 years sober and I'm here. Like, what? You know, how did this happen again? I'm like two steps away from being impatient again, like back to the psych ward, right? And it was self will run riot. There was just way more of me and a lot less of God in my life at that point, and had been for a number of years. So I had all of these bedevilments. And that experience for me is what really cemented for me that I was exactly all of these things. I couldn't make a living. Well, clearly I was on medical leave for 6 months. I mean, honestly, I couldn't be of real help to, yeah, I couldn't be real help. I couldn't even barely help myself. You know, I was basically suicidal. So it was, you know, and then the piece of our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. At that moment, right, where my life is blowing up and I am crying hysterically on the floor of my child's little multicolored rug, you know, where she has her little tea parties. And I'm sitting there face down in a pile of tears and snot, you know, going, I don't know. I'm out of answers. I thought this was the right thing to do. I thought the big fancy job and the big living in New York. And I thought this was all my ideas have landed me here onto this multicolored carpet, you know, like this is. And I remember that moment. I was like, oh, right? Because I'd been spiritually asleep for a few years. It was like God started to wake. Hello. I was like, oh, this is the best I can do gets me on this multicolored carpet. That's the best I can do on my own, you know? And so I really realized that my ideas really didn't work. And actually all my ideas suck. They just do. And so, okay. So now what, right? Now, of course, the next day I was like trying to see if I could book a trip to India because I was going to go find myself in India. I was going to have my own eat, pray, love moment. I was going to spend like $30,000 and my poor husband, oh my God. But, I did not, you know, my sponsor told me, she was like, oh, you're going to go to India. She was like, you're in an IOP and you're going to go to India. She was like, why don't you just show up at my kitchen table on Sunday? And then maybe you can go to India after that, but why don't you just show up on my kitchen table on Sunday? And I was like, oh, these steps, there's more, I've got more going on. These steps aren't going to fix everything, you know? So, but fine. Right. And then I never went to India, you know, and was thoroughly convinced going through the steps with her, thoroughly convinced that my ideas all suck. Now, doesn't mean that I don't still go back into that today. I still have moments of like self-will, right? But I know today, I have enough evidence in my life that the God idea does work. It really does. And I just need to be here with you people so that I keep getting reminded of that. And I keep hearing and I keep seeing God and hearing God in all of you. And I'll pass.
Excellent. That was brilliant. Unfortunately, we are at that time though. We're going to switch gears from reading and sharing to Seventh Tradition and wrapping up the meeting. But oh my goodness, ladies, that was fantastic. So let me... post this little Seventh Tradition thing. First, let me post this one in the chat And then I'm going to share this screenshot of the seventh tradition for y'all in case you want to just snap a picture or do the little like fancy QR code thing. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. And a note for everyone, because somebody just brought it to my attention. Oftentimes when you send via Venmo, it'll ask for like a 4-digit code confirming you know the person, et cetera, et cetera. There is a bypass on your app for that because the person who has access to the account is not logged in. So they will not be able to respond and give you the 4-digit code for you to confirm. So you just have to do the bypass thing or use PayPal, either or.
All you got to do is click send without confirming.
Yes, that's it. Right. Thank you. I forgot the exact terminology that's on your phone. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Let's see. I'll make sure so everybody can unmute themselves. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? You can unmute and share if you have something. Okay. I think there's still two more months, fourth Wednesday of each month. I think it's 7 o'clock on intergroup website. You can find the connection for the concepts workshop that they're doing every Wednesday night. So if you go on tidewaterintergroup.org, you can get the links and the connections for that. But it's the fourth Wednesday of each month. We got two more months going on. So check it out. It's been pretty good. I haven't been able to make every one of them, but they've been on fire. Any other announcements I'm missing? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang around after the meeting. Home group members, hands up. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available after the meeting, after we close the meeting. Feel free to ask questions, talk to any of us or hanging around. Or if you're shy, you can go to info@simpleactions.net and you can send an email there and we can help you get connected that way too. In closing, I would like everyone to thank our wonderful speakers tonight. And unmute, say thank you real quick, or give us an applause.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks, Jill. Thanks, Jill. Thanks, Carolina.
Thank you, ladies.
Yeah, thanks, Carolina. Thanks, Jill.
Dream team on step two. Thank y'all both so much.
Yes, thank you. You guys did a fantastic job. Thanks to all who participated. And you guys can thank them again after the Lord's Prayer, get in a few extra words to connect with them. And I'm going to have our good friend Mike F. give us a vision for you. Let me share that for him. Oh, if I get it right, I'll share it. This is so much harder on a laptop. I'm pretty good at this and it's still a struggle. Sorry, Mike.
No worries.
That one, there we go. Up and on there.
All right, a vision for you, page 164. Big book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellow. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, Mike. That was fantastic. I think we get to round up as best we can in this virtual world and unmute ourselves and do a Lord's Prayer for anyone who would like to join me. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Woo! Thank you guys so much.
It was good seeing